Are levels of mental illness rising, or are the ways in which we communicate and the digital trails we leave behind reveal much more about people in trouble? They become something of a stage for people in trouble to act out, to end things with an audience, so we're much more aware of it. These are among the questions facing mental health professionals as the whole field is changing, along with how people are thinking about mental illness these days. The numbers say that the U.S. suicide rates are the highest in 30 years. If you tell your phone that you're feeling suicidal, the voice of Siri is programmed to direct you to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. Dr. Joseph Franklin is assistant professor of psychology at Florida State University, and he's gone one better. He has a game-like app called Therapeutic Evaluation Conditioning, or TechTech, he calls it. He thinks it could be the next big thing in mental health care. TechTech uses reliable Pavlovian conditioning techniques to modify potentially suicidal behaviors. Preliminary tests of his app reduced self-cutting episodes, suicide plans, and suicidal behaviors, sometimes as much as 77%.
We don't really have any really effective treatments for suicidal behaviors. No medications really work. Hospitalizing people doesn't really work. And some of our best, most promising treatments like cognitive behavior therapies and variations on that may work, but the evidence is still quite mixed on some of those. So one of the major things that we did was go back to a recent theory actually proposed by Dr. Thomas Joyner at Florida State, where he said that one of the major things involved in the process of serious suicidal behavior was having a capability to engage in those behaviors, which was really defined primarily as a fearlessness about death and suicide. And what we found is that the people who were more at risk did have this capability, and what this app essentially does is it lowers their capability.
What do I see, though, if I call your app up at a moment of crisis?
It's a little bit more of a preventative tool than an active intervening in that particular moment. It's essentially a matching game that has a variety of types of pictures, some pleasant, some unpleasant, some related to suicide and self-injury, and some not. And their goal is to, make their way through this game. It takes 1 to 2 minutes to do it as quickly as possible to get as many points as possible. And so what it really seeks to do is change some of the fundamental associations that they have with things. And one of the primary things that we're trying to change their associations with is death, suicide, and self-injury in general. And so, for example, if I showed you a picture of someone who just cut their arm up or who had just burned themselves alive, you'd find it very aversive, and so would I. Finding those kinds of pictures and stimuli very aversive really acts as an important barrier that keeps us from engaging those behaviors, even if we actually wanted to do them. But what we know based on some of our studies is that people who are most at risk for actually engaging in suicidal behaviors actually regard those kinds of really aversive stimuli as being pretty neutral or sometimes even very pleasant. And so what this app does on a very basic level is it rebuilds that barrier by having them associate those things with fear and disgust.
You know, a lot of people say that the existence that we have with our digital devices is we're disengaged from face-to-face, human-to-human contact, and that kind of an existence can encourage, depression, low self-esteem, and essentially suicide. Are you worried that an app is part of the problem as opposed to part of the solution?
I think that a lot of people would also argue that social media really does a great job of connecting a lot of people as well, and connecting a lot of people who otherwise might not have had the same sorts of connections. I think in terms of app-based treatment being more of a problem than a help, I think that the cost-benefit ratio on that is firmly in the category of it being a huge positive because of the huge imbalance in the number of mental health care professionals that we have on the ground compared to the number of people that need help. Even if all mental health care professionals practice 100% effective therapy all the time, it would still only make a small dent in the national rates. So what the question I ask is, if clinical psychology and psychiatry didn't exist before today, what would we do? How would we study mental disorders and how do we go about treating them? I personally don't think that we would first go to, you know, one-on-one in a room. I think that we would go to technologies from the scaling to the speed to the flexibility can really greatly amplify any actual progress that we're able to make.
So from the consumer angle, what's the next step for your app? What kind of support do you think you might get from partners who would take it to 2.0?
We always want for it to be 100% free to the public and consumers and anyone who would be interested, because our hope is not to make money. Our hope is to actually, you know, see the first large-scale declines in suicidal behavior in 100 years. And to do that, what we really want to do is partner with industries to start developing a whole range of technologies that really improve our large-scale risk detection and ability to prevent this. We have a long way to go.
Really great to talk to you. And the name of this app is?
Therapeutic Evaluative Conditioning, but on the app stores, it would be TechTech, TEC-TEC.
You know, you really should work on that name, Joe. Dr. Joe Franklin is Assistant Professor of Psychology at Florida State University.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.